All right, hey, it's Robert Martinez, the Apartment Rockstar, and welcome to another episode of the Apartment Rockstar podcast. Hey, this is going to be a fun one, and we're going to talk a lot about branding, networking, how important that is in business. Just a little story and how the three people here, how they ended up on stage with me here, is that I went to Dallas for a speaking engagement. Originally, I was only supposed to go and be an attendee. Somebody, Mark Allen, who's the broker up in Dallas, I was going up there to get to know him a little bit better and shake hands, kiss babies, and just get to know who was there in Dallas because I wanted to buy in Dallas. And while I was there, I was asked to speak because someone wasn't able to show up because of a cancellation. So, of course, you know, you always look for every opportunity to get on stage and speak. And so I took it right away. And I'm sitting up there and I'm with other apartment guys that own hundreds of thousand units, a guy that has a construction company that specializes in apartments. And in the stage, I found Natalie. And Natalie is part of NextGen. NextGen is a real estate meetup group in Dallas, Texas. And she asked if we could do an appearance together. And I said, hey, you know what? This is a good week for me. If you're willing to come down to Houston, we're happy to have you on our podcast studio. And so we're here today. Natalie, welcome to you and your team.
Thank you for having us. I'm so excited. We are NextGen. This is Ismael. This is Will. And I'm Natalie. So I'll go ahead and do a short introduction for myself. Again, I'm Natalie Contreras. You can follow me at Natalie Meagan, M-E-A-A-G-A-N, or at Think Brand First, whichever works best. So I do brand and marketing strategy for real estate entrepreneurs. And the reason I was at the event that Robert was speaking at is because I'm looking to get into multifamily. What's the best way to get started than to just indulge in the industry that you're wanting to jump in? So, I mean, he was talking on stage. I learned a lot from him, started following him, and he was kind enough to reach out and actually have a conversation. So this whole experience has been super great.
I appreciate that she's very young. She's 21, which is amazing, right? Because I was not doing what she's doing at 21. I was still trying to figure out how to get off my couch in college. And here she is, big game hunting. You know, she went straight for the apartment rock star and said, I like your vibe. I like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You got 4,000 units. Certainly there's something that I can learn from you. And so I think that's a big message for a lot of millennials out there, right, is that you have this opportunity in front of you to go out there either through social media, through, you know, YouTube or what have you, or just to in-person events to go out there networking, because the more people you know, the more opportunity you're going to create. You know, I think I heard an expression once that says contacts equal contracts. Mm. And I think that's really, really good expression. So kudos to you, Natalie, for having the ability and the courage to reach out, you know, and put yourself out there and see what happens. So congrats. Yeah. Who do you have with you?
So I have Ismael and I have Will. I'll go ahead and let Will start off. Introduce yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Will Castillo from Dallas, Texas. I recently graduated college in December of 2020. Been doing real estate since May of 2019. Started off in the financing side through hard money lending. So now we created NextGen together. That way we really wanted to expose myself to different opportunities within real estate, because I know there's many more than just single family residential or even hard money lending on the financing side. So it's been really, really life changing to putting this together and meeting all these new people through NextGen. So that's kind of why I'm here. I'm excited to be meeting and being in front of Robert today. And yeah, that's a little bit what I do.
That's awesome. I'll go ahead and introduce myself to the audience. My name is Ismael Sanchez, best known as Real Estate Amigo. I'm an agent, but mainly work with investors. So I've been, you know, working with creating rental portfolios or flipping houses with them. But we got together, create NextGen to connect and elevate, you know, as the whole thing that we got together today, because we're trying to create our own luck. You know, I was talking to Robert and, you know, what's the definition of luck? You know, whenever opportunity meets experience, that's exactly what happened right here. You know, Natalie had the opportunity, Robert has the experience, and we're over here trying to create our own luck.
I think it's amazing that they're here right now. I think it's awesome that they're all generally in the same age bracket and they're putting themselves out there and they're realizing like, hey, I want more. You know, I've got my own children. I've got a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old at home, and my 16-year-old is ready to, you know, stop playing sports and get into the workforce. And he wants to get a part-time job. And he said, I think I'm just going to go across the corner to go to Burger King and go apply. And I'm sitting there and I just don't know how to handle this, you know, what he just said to me, because, you know, I started out working at Whataburger as my first job. So I know it taught me a couple things no real life lessons other than maybe your first chance to work in a group. I think the training at probably a Chick-fil-A would be better, you know, if you're going to do something like that. However, I don't know if that's the right course. So if you don't mind, because I think you guys are like very entrepreneurial spirited, and I'm amazed because it took me quite a bit longer before I was able to make a jump to do something that was different than what I was taught. Like, we're all taught to go to school and get good grades. We're all taught by that by our mentors. But you guys have other mentors besides your parents. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here on this stage. You guys have been paying attention, pushing the envelope, and there's some people that have influenced you. I want to be a good mentor for my children. And I know they learn a lot by watching. I don't know if them working at a fast food joint is the best first job for them. Mm-hmm. Long term. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask that question first. Each of you just kind of give me your you know, 20, 30 second thoughts on if you think that's a good idea or not. And what do you think they should be doing instead?
I'll go first. So I think that's a great question. Actually, you remind me a lot of my dad. Mm-hmm. And my dad is my mentor. Always been a businessman, worked in finance for 20 years. And so I remember being in high school and I would see him work. I would shadow him at his office, get to meet the team that he's built, see the numbers. I don't understand, but I was like, dang, those are big numbers, mm-hmm. right? And so whenever I wanted to get my first job, I worked at Chipotle.
Oh, wow.
I worked at Chipotle. You know, I wasn't passionate. I was just showing up every day, and he saw that. So whenever I would get home, I'd get home at 11, 12, whenever it closed, and he was doing trading at the time. He was managing a hedge fund. So I would just sit there. You know, he was like, make your money, but learn what you're going to do with your money. You know, make your money however you want to make your money. You always need to, like, build up your capital, right?
If I can jump in there, I'm going to say, I almost wanted to do it because my first job was $3.35 an hour. Now, I don't know what starting pay is today, probably minimum wage, which is, what, $7 and change. And I want him to, more or less, right? And I want him to learn the lesson that this is what you're going to do in life if you don't learn a skill.
Yeah.
You're going to trade your time for money. That's what it is, right? And what is your time worth? Well, Burger King, Chick-fil-A say your time is worth $7 and something cents. What does that mean? It means if you can flip a burger, you can throw down a batch of fries, you can take somebody's order, you can work here and do it with a smile. That's not career building. Mm-hmm. And that's just basically saying you don't really have any real skills. So I'm going to give you the minimal skills. I'm going to pay the minimum amount of money. I almost want him to learn to work there for a little bit to realize what it is. I also want him to see people who are there much older than he is, and this is really what their career. And look how different, right? Because the Burger King is right behind where he lives. And he gets to go, he lives in a $2 million home, and these people would have no idea where he lives. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to see this young kid, and they're going to give him, you know, kitchen duty. He'll probably do tomatoes and lettuce and work in the produce. Yeah, the dishes of what I used to do. But he's going to see how other people live.
Yes.
With just the same skill set. So I'm tempted to let him do it, but there's a piece of me that wants him to do something more real estate related, right? So what do you think, Will?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think I would definitely let him do it. He's a young kid, he's 16, you know. He's fortunate to have you as his father. Like, this is never gonna go away for him. And so I think it is going to be very valuable. I really like the saying, smelling the leather, you know? And I think this is kind of like the opposite of smelling the leather. Like you said, it being exposed, seeing how people treat you. Maybe people will treat him differently, and then they do find out he lives in a $2 million home. How will they treat him then? So I think, like, it'll be a short-lived experience, but I think it will benefit him down the line just to, like, because I think in the entrepreneur world, we do get caught in these tough spots where it's like, am I going to keep on doing this? Should I just go work the hourly or the salary, right? And then once you start thinking about what kind of money that actually brings and what that lifestyle is really like, you're like, nah, I could never go back to that. So I would say that's my take on that. I would let him do it since he's 16. Maybe if he was 18 or 20 or 21, be like, no, you need to go straight into
real estate. Very quick, everybody, just define what you mean by smell the leather, because I know we all hear it differently. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you?
So when I first got introduced to that term, I actually heard it from Dan Pena. So he has this So the way he said it is that, like, you know, he would take his students into a Rolls Royce and just let them experience the Rolls Royce. And then one of the students said, like, it smells like, wow, you can smell the leather. And he was like, no crap, you can smell the leather. This is all made out of one cow. So it's like kind of taking yourself and smelling the leather makes you not look so silly later in times when you're stating the obvious, maybe.
I like that.
Like, you know, putting yourself in positions to smell the leather, increasing that baseline like we talked about earlier, helps you maybe just stand out and build a little bit more authenticity and character behind you. So I think that him living, working that way job would be the opposite of that, but like in a good way, in a character building way.
No, I see it. I really appreciate you taking the time to explain that, because I, as you're talking, I'm hearing you, mm-hmm. and I'm comparing to what my own thought was on it. And then I've got already like a little tangent I'm already thinking about of how that means. I basically said a similar thing to you. I want him to smell the leather of what it's like to live that life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were trying to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, and versus the life you get to go home to, where you don't have to worry about bills. You don't have to mm-hmm. worry about, all you got to do is do your homework and get up in the morning and go to school. That's all you got to do. You know, and these people that will be working with him, this is their 40-hour job. Mm-hmm. And he might potentially be taking hours from them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good. I appreciate that. What do you think, man? What do you think?
Man, coming from a Hispanic background, kind of relate to what my parents were telling me when I was younger. You know, you have to work hard, get a college degree, and work hard. And I think the concept comes with the technology that we have today to the technology that we had back then, right? What I mean with that is the opportunity that you have today to make money with technology, with comparison to the money that you can make before. So our parents were like, you have to work hard, you know, you have to go something secure, something that they're gonna pay you, a big company, you know. But I feel the most important thing as growing up, that was my mom's side. My dad's side was more of like, pay attention to the conversations that I'm having around yeah. people. So you can understand. And growing up, honestly, I would just be in the room trying to see what these people have to say. Never really understood what my dad meant, like pay attention to what we say, until I grew up and I started having big conversations with people. And it's like, oh, that's what my dad meant.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like having the right people around you and the right environment, either is gonna teach you a big lesson that you can learn on by working on those level works. But the most important thing is surround yourself with good people. So I think it might be a good opinion if you want to teach them a lesson, but you shouldn't keep them there long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, my thought process is, and I'm gonna end it up with this, is that, you know, I have resources. I've got a 120-person company. What can he do? You know, and really, he doesn't have a skill set. He's got IQ, but that doesn't translate to anything yet. I mean, what if I pay for him to come over here after school and sit with, I pay for him. What if I employ him to come be Tyler? Tyler is our videographer right here. He loves kids. He looks like a kid. I mean, he could sit there and he could teach him, hey, you know what? I got to do these edits for dad. Why don't you help me learn how to do these edits and learn a skill? Because I think, now hear me when I go with this. We talked a lot in our pregame, our pre-warm-up about branding, and we're going to get into that subject today, right? Mm-hmm. But what if you can create your own branding,
mm-hmm.
right? I had to go get a videographer like Tyler, and I got to pay Tyler, and Tyler's not cheap, by the way. I have to employ Tyler, but what if in the beginning you could learn how to do that yourself? What if you can create your own little videos? Mm-hmm. What a great skill set. Right? Because he's ready to walk away. It's almost like bittersweet because we play a lot of soccer and he's ready to walk away from playing soccer. It doesn't interest him anymore. He doesn't want out of it anymore. And I think he needs a new passion. And I'm wondering if like putting him in front of a monitor with software and learn, look, there he's texting me right now, and seeing what this is like might be a better fit. Because that's a real skill set. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's a hybrid of what you guys
right.
said. Yeah. Let them work it for a little bit. Like, okay, this is what you're worth. Now come over here and learn the skill set that you can actually sell that skill set to somebody else. Like, why couldn't he do, like, Tyler's got other multiple, I mean, gigs you got, Tyler?
Wow.
You got a lot of gigs, right? This is one stream of income, which maybe it's his, and it's his consistent stream of income. He knows what the expectations are. But he's got his other side gigs. Just like I have my apartments, right? I've got over 20-some communities, right? I don't rely on one community paycheck or one management fee paycheck. I have multiple streams. In fact, this is distribution month. I'll get 20 different ACHs into my account. Like, how powerful is that, right? Well, it's because I've learned a skill, and I know how to produce that skill. And if you learn a skill like videography and editing, I think it'd be like Ghost Mm-hmm. which I really appreciate. You gave me some really, this is really important because I really didn't know how to handle this.
So I want to add something to that is I think something that he would really benefit from working at a place like Burger King is emotional intelligence, right? Building empathy, learning how to resonate with people who may not be in a certain mindset or position that, you know, that he may have grown up in, the mindset, you know.
That's fantastic because again, you know, poor Ty's in here alone. right? Yeah. And he's doing a lot of work. And he doesn't get that community feel in the rest of the company. So he loves when somebody comes into his podcast his smile, studio here. And like, I got some company, right? So you're right. You don't get to learn the EQ that way if you're kind of isolated, hermited away. So yeah. I really appreciate the points. Thank you for, see, you added value for that. So let's do this. I'm excited. All right, next gen group. What can I answer for you?
I think a good question to get it going is, you know, we're young professionals and we often want to get into big stuff like multifamily, but that might seem really far away from us because maybe we need capital, maybe we need to bring something that we don't know. What do you suggest for people that are trying to, you know, elevate, connect with multifamily? What are good three steps that maybe we can take?
All right, number one is you need to understand that it's a marathon and not a sprint. You know, there is so much urgency to get it done yesterday. And I'm a big fan of Gary Vee, and he talks about patience. You know, my first deals, it was one deal a year. I'd work it until I couldn't work it anymore. I optimized it, put the system in place, now move on to the next deal. I didn't buy four or five deals in the beginning. Because had I done it, I would have been four or five deals hoping that I was doing it the right way. Instead of knowing that I'm doing it the right way. So I think for you guys is to understand, number one, what is it you really want to do? Number two, so are you going to write that down, that goal? All right. What is the goal before? Gary Vee wants to buy the Jets. Mm-hmm. Right? The Jets are going to cost him, I don't know, let's say it's $5 billion. Okay, $5 billion. What do I need to do to get to $5 billion? Well, I need to have multiple companies that I just sold. Right? So, okay, boom. And you just work your way backwards. Well, what company do I need to have? Well, I can develop a company on this or develop a company on that, and I'll get a valuation, I'll sell it for this, and there's my cash. As you guys know, he buys companies. He does different things. He invests a founder in multiple companies. We talk about Grant Cardone wanting to do 10,000, you know, tech companies, right? He's doing the same thing. He's creating the potential future so he can do later on what he wants to do. So with you guys, I would follow a similar formula. Where is it you want to go? And then work your way backwards. And give yourself timelines. I'm going to be at this point by this point. When I didn't have any bigger goals, my goal was to make $100,000 by the time I'm 30. That was one of my earliest goals when I first got married. I remember that. You know, and then I told myself, you know, we're going to get to, we maxed out on our 401ks. And we're going to get $1 million each into our retirement accounts. And we can retire at age, I don't know what it was, 50 or 55. You know how little those goals were when I look at them today? $1 million, 50, 55. I'm 47 and my net worth is tens of millions of dollars today. But it's because I found the right path and I exploited it as much as I could and squeezed out of it and pushed it. But I had to find a mentor to do that. I had to find a mentor who showed me a different path, because the path I knew was going to take me on that path at 100,000 by 30. I didn't find multifamily real estate until 2007, so I was 33 years old. So I hit my 100,000 goal because I wrote it down. That was something that was important to me. But it wasn't until the next 3 years later. And then I spent $10,000 to join a real estate club, which was a lot of money to me. It's a lot of money to me now. That $10,000 was the best money. It was the best single decision of my life, bar none, because it gave me the opportunity, luck, to move forward in that direction, which turned into multifamily. I cannot imagine being in anything else right now. I don't want to do. I get calls all the time from financial advisors wanting me to invest, and they're like, nope. All my money, all my eggs in one basket, and I'll guard it with my life. So with you guys, I think you need to figure out, write down your goals. And your goals will change because your mentors change. You know, when you ask my dad, you know, say you ask me, you know, with my dad making what he made, if $1 million was a lot of money, I would have said, yeah, it's a lot of money. But if you ask Donald Trump Jr., if $1 million is a lot of money, he's not going to say yes. He's going to say no, because it's not. Because his context, his thought process, where his mindset, his place in life is different. Your place in life will be different too. You would always need to be leveling up your goals. The closer you get to them, you hit them. If your goals don't scare you, they're too small. If they don't, and not just you, and I mean you, I mean your group, your family. If your goals don't scare them, they're too small. they're too small. And so figure out what you want and realize it is a marathon to hit that. And you may never hit that goal because the goal is so big. Did you ever see that one video with Matthew McConaughey where he's there talking about his future self and he's talking about the man he wants to be?
I haven't seen that.
Okay, you should find this because it's amazing. But he basically talks about the man I want to be in 5 years and 10 years. And he gets there and the man comes back to him and says, hey, so are you the man you want to be in 5, 10 years? Heck no. Because I still got this and this to grow. I want to be that guy. 10 years later comes around. Are you that man? No. You're never going to be the man. Mm. Or he never going to be the man that he wanted to be because he's constantly leveling up. He's had kids. He got married. He became this. He became that. The goals constantly change because your life changed.
Agree.
So be well aware. Don't judge yourself so hard. So many millennials judge themselves because they just can't compete at the same speed as, you know, as a Kardashian. What's unfair because, you know, you didn't have the Kardashian. Kris Jenner is your mom.
Yeah.
Who's a business ninja who was okay to exploit her children for their fame and their gain. And it worked for them. And that's their cross we'll have to bear if you're okay. You know, exposing your children naked on social media, yeah. But it got you the fame you needed, and now they're all going to be billionaires. Mm-hmm. And who's the first one to be the billionaire? Was the youngest one. Mm-hmm. Why? Because she's the youngest one. Because she saw all the lessons.
That's true.
She capitalized on all the things that occurred. It's not the ones you hear about all the time. It's the youngest one that nobody ever talked about.
That's so true.
Because they, all the little mistakes, right? All the little lessons. You know, L does not stand for loss. It stands for I learned something. Mm-hmm. So she got the advantage of that. Right. So the goals change.
And I think that's a very important topic because a lot of young people nowadays fear a lot. You know, there's a lot of information now out there too that people get stuck on paralysis analysis, you know. And then I feel like we need to be able to use our fear as motivation, you know, because I think, and I just started realizing this not too long ago where, like you said, like if my goals doesn't scare me enough, then what's my motivation waking up in the morning?
Absolutely. You know? You remember Gary Vee used to always say, regret drives him. It drives me. You know, he tells this really famous story of when if you want to find regret, go to a nursing home and talk to them. And talk to them and find out what they didn't do, what they wish they had done. What's my regret with my kids? I don't want to live in there. I go to every single soccer game. Mm-hmm. I go to every single thing because, you know, I'm divorced now. I don't want them ever to think that something else came in front of them. I'm also, my dad worked too hard. He worked himself to death, I think. And he wasn't there to watch me play soccer. He wasn't there to share in those ones. One of the greatest moments I ever had was when I was winning an award here in Houston, City Owner of the Year, and he got to come to that. First time. And he passed away 3 months later. Oh. But he was there. He was there for that, right? So Gary's thing is, I don't want to be 80 years old in my deathbed with regret. Because at the end of the day, your kids may not be able to make it there around you when you're alone. Your spouse may not be able to be there with you when you're alone. When you're on your deathbed, you are left with yourself. And you're going to be sitting there, and you know this is true. You're going to be sitting there going through your life and asking yourself, did I make the right decisions in this life? Did I make the right call? Did I go after my goals or do I let somebody stop them? Who was the anchor in my life that prevented me? And it's going to be you because you allowed it to happen. So those of you that are out there, if you're in some sort of like horrible relationship, toxic, if you're in a bad situation, it's your choice. You know, if you want to be happy, make a decision to be happy. Choose happiness. I've had to go there, and it's a very difficult decision because you have to break hearts. You have to hurt yourself. But at the end of the day, if you don't do it, you're going to break your heart on the last day on earth because you'll be thinking about what happened. So I live this life with little regret. I take this podcast request because I want to understand who you are. I want to know who you are. I want to learn from you, just like I'm giving back to you. You're hearing hopefully a couple of things you hadn't heard before. I'm watching, like, man, I'm inspired. Why aren't I doing more? Mm-hmm. What if you look, you guys are so much further down the map than when I was at 21. Holy cow. You know? Holy cow. This should change your life because you're adding something to it that wasn't there before. And so there'll be a different thought pattern and process moving forward. You're going to say, Ishmael?
Yeah, no, those are good points. I think we often forget that, you know, we're trying to hit our goals, and not just necessarily because either we hit them or we don't hit them, doesn't mean that we cannot set new goals. I feel like a lot of people get stuck of like, okay, let me get a million, or maybe I'm not getting a million, but maybe if you set your bar of like, you know what, let me make 5 million. Maybe that motivation will actually push you farther, because what's that saying?
Well, we all like GC, right?
Yeah.
Why does he say 10x?
10x.
Because you're not going to have to reset the goals if they're 10x. You're going to try to get there. And even if you somehow don't get the 10x, you might get the 7x, which is way further than what you ever wanted to hit, that you ever thought you could hit. I'm a sales guy from my previous career, and it was commission. And man, I wish somebody had said to me, this number, you're going to get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You're going to try. Because you got kids and a wife at home. You got bills to pay. You know? So you're going to kill what you're going to eat tonight, or you don't eat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a concept that Ismail actually introduced to us a couple weeks ago, maybe. It was called burn the boats. Have you heard of that phrase?
I have heard that expert. Why don't you explain to everybody listening?
Okay. So I'm not too good of remembering that, but it's like, I think it was a Spanish conqueror back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. They came to conquer land, and he decided, hey, let's burn the boats, because we're either conquering or we're dying.
Yeah, we're not going back.
We're not going back.
We're here. One way or another, we're here. Mm-hmm. We're going to survive or we're not, but we're going to do it together.
Together.
And we're going to know that we achieved it together.
There's an other phrase. It's, if you want to go quickly, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
Yeah. So let's go into that, right? That's a great expression, because earlier in our prep, we were talking about the decision that I made to bring in people. You know, I have a 120 person company today. But about 20 of them are on the corporate team. And it's each one of these positions I did myself. Underwriting, the accounting, marketing, lead management, investor relations, the financial analysis, asset management. And I did them for so long because, one, I didn't have budget to hire anybody, so I do it myself. But I realized that as I started to peel away, it was very difficult because I thought only I could do it, and I was too busy to slow down and teach you how to do it. Eventually, you get to a cracking point, a breaking point, where it breaks. And if you don't fill that gap, your boat's going to sink. And I filled the gap, and I hired the first person to take over some stuff. I'm like, wow, I can breathe. But you don't know what your work-life balance is until everybody's is different. Somebody may have discovered that 2 years earlier before I did, 3 years earlier before I did. It took me a while. But I've noticed now that I've been hiring, I hired first what I didn't want to do. I doubled down what I'm great at, and I hired out my weakness. And slowly, I'm going through the list of my best things that I'm good at, what I like to do, and what I don't like to do. And you start with the bottom of the list, right? Because you create mental happiness when you take away something that you don't want to do. There's a dread. There's a toxicness to it, right? And once you eliminate that, you're like, whoa, I can breathe, I can see, I can think. And if you're constantly worried about how I'm going to get everything done, you slow down your thought process. When you can hire it out, and now you can see over the trees. You can now see where it's going, because you're not, the minutia of it all isn't on top of you along with everything else that's going on. So hiring out is so important. It's ridiculous. You know, so back to your expression, you know, you want to go fast, go alone. Or how does the expression, finish that expression.
You want to go far. Go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
That's 100% true. Mm-hmm. And I love that too, because I don't want to get to the top of the mountain alone. I don't. I want to have you, and you with me, so we can share the stories along the way. So when we get to the top of the mountain, we can pat each other on the back and say, man, remember this, remember that, but we did it. And along the way, if we're getting to the top of the mountain, we hit something, we achieve something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Probably financial. And if you're with me, you're going to win in that too.
Yeah, that's what really attracts me, I guess, about multifamily, I guess, compared to single family, where single family with the wholesaling, with the flipping, even like being a real estate agent, you know, there's a lot more competition, and there's competition nonetheless, but you know, the margins and the percentages are a lot significantly less compared to multifamily, where I feel like, since there's so much more for everybody to eat off of in multifamily, it creates almost like a lot more like just cooperation and team playing.
But here's the other thing too, you're comparing it to being a realtor, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you don't get up in the morning?
Yeah, well, then you don't...
Nothing.
You don't get anything.
But in multifamily, if you don't get up in the morning, your check's still coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difference. I think people need to learn that they need to replace that labor aspect of their life.
Exactly.
Where I have to kill what I'm going to eat tonight. If I don't go kill, I'm not going to eat, right? Well, what if it's on automation? I'm not saying you can't keep doing that. Mm-hmm. You can't. Try to automate that, though, where you have a team of people. You're in control of the process. In multifamily, that's basically what it is. You got a team of people helping you work the rent checks that come in, that pay the bills, that at the end of the day, pay your cash flow and create your opportunities in life. So it's really important to get, people don't know that. I mean, there's so many people that we work 40 years and they don't learn that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
They work, I think they do at the end, like, dude, I'm working 40 years because I can't stop, because then I won't eat. Because then guess what happens in life? My daughter wants to go to college. Next thing you know, my daughter wants to get married and I got to pay for the wedding. Next thing you know, my daughter wants to get a house and I got to help with the house, because you're a good dad,
mm-hmm,
or you're a good mom, you know, or other things. My kids need money for a school uniform. You know, there's different things along the way. It wasn't just you. And it's like, it worked for you in the beginning when you're all alone in that single one bedroom apartment like I was in,
mm-hmm,
right? But over time, you got to be able to expand. So it's all about creating multiple streams of income.
Yeah, and I think with what you're saying is a lot of people create their own cage, you know, and I feel people get into their habits, you know, either they're, well, this is what I know how to do, this is what I'm used to doing, I'm just gonna keep doing it, maybe do a little bit more about it, maybe work a little bit harder, but they're still in the same box, you know. And I think with you know, burning the boats, you know, overcoming the fears, I think let's talk a little bit about how you went from, you know, a corporate job. How did you burn your boats?
Wow, that's a great question, because I did. I had a corporate job where I was making about $1.40, $1.50 a year, and that's a very comfortable living, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what gets in the way of a great life?
A good life.
A good life. That's exactly right. And so I told myself, here I am in my corporate life, and I'm comfortable. Now, I'm a little upset because they keep playing with my commission plan, and when I'm killing something, they want to split it three ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I got tired of that. It happened like three times in a row. So then I found something that made sense to me on business radio. I looked at child care facilities, I looked at water vending machines, and I found this crazy guy on the real estate radio, on business radio, talking about real estate in his club. And I remember writing that check for $10,000 and thinking, man, you know, and him telling everybody that 80% of you will do nothing with what I just taught you. I'm thinking, dude, that's not going to be me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be part of the 20% that wins. That does something with this, with the education I just paid for. And not only was it the best decision of my life, you know, but it taught me a lot about how you had to take a risk to get ahead. And at that point in time, you know, I was married and she made good income beyond what I was making, which is incredible. But it was the right time in my life that if I walk away from my guaranteed paycheck, because that's all it is handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. Walking from my guaranteed paycheck to multifamily investing, which was going to pay me, my little fee was maybe equal to $32,000 a year. You know, it's a big step down. It's four. Mm-hmm. It's a 25% fall. 75% fall. 80% fall. But I'm going to do this. I'm going to learn this. And I'm going to give this my best chance. Because if worst comes to worst, it doesn't go right, I can always go back to my dad. Because once you learn how to make 100K, you can always make 100K.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skill set. It's like being a senior. You get to the level, you know how to do it. I know how to knock on doors. I know how to talk to customers. I know how to ask the right questions. So I'll just do it again. But I may never get this chance in time to take a risk.
Mm, important.
You know? I was 33.
I have actually a question for you. So, like, when I know in other occasions you've spoken on, like, the A players, you know, how A players don't necessarily stay or leave because of the money, but they'll stay or leave because of the environment or the management or those, you know, that's what they'll really stay for, because they can make that money wherever they go. So, like, let's say you are younger and, you know, maybe you lack the awareness or experience to say, to identify that you are an A player, but you don't know if you should stay here anymore or you should leave. What would you say help someone identify some things that they can identify that would help them make that decision?
Or how do you keep A players in your?
What you need to do is you need to rank everybody in your organization,
mm-hmm,
and you need to figure out who can you not live without, and that's your A players,
mm-hmm,
right? Because your bottom third of your business will dictate how far you go as a company. And you should be shredding them.
The tail.
Yes. Well, no, they're holding you back. They're like an anchor. And you're trying to go fast. And this bottom third doesn't want to go fast because there are problems, there are drama, there's issues. They don't pay attention. They don't do the training. They don't follow what you taught them. If you remove them, maybe you can find a better player, and you now create, you increase in the average, right? Along the way, your average gets better. So people that were good enough 2 years ago are not good enough right now. And that's a tough call. So you got to tell them, like, you're not cutting it. And if you want to keep sitting with this company, you got to keep growing and evolving. And that's true in personal relationships. You know, I hate to admit this, but I mean, I'm divorced today because our thought process has changed. And that turned into other conversations and other situations, right? You didn't grow together at the same pace. I try very hard that if I never want anybody to feel like they're not getting paid enough. I look at them and I look at their value all the time, and I'm like, man, can I do this with somebody else? Am I paying them enough? What is it going to cost me if they leave? You know, I had a conversation today with someone who's an A player. Actually, it wasn't with them. It was with my HR. And, you know, they said XYZ person is not happy with where they're at. And I'm like, okay, well, who is it? How much? And as soon as they said the name, I'm like, oh my gosh. And how much are they getting? Oh, crap. Like, I knew instantly that she's an A player. I knew instantly that I better jump on this right away, because you got to react to this stuff. Because if I'm not talking to her, she's talking to somebody else. And she's going to jet. And how am I going to do if she leaves? I want my business to be calm and cool. I can't do that if people are leaving like that, right? Which means that if I need to take from somebody else, I will, because you're not good enough. I need her. I can duplicate your average performance easy. I can't duplicate this. Because this is hearts on this side. The A players all have one thing in common, and it's hearts. They all will go that extra mile. And that person goes the extra mile every single time. So it's very important to just put your head down and go to work. And if you have the right kind of boss, they'll reward you for that. They will know who you are. They will know that you're an A player. And they'll realize, I can't do without them, he or she. And you will come to them first with their compensation increase before they do. And chances are, it's probably going to be lower than if you were to let them go out into the open market. For example, let's go to baseball real quick, right? You always want to try to sign your own players sooner. You don't want to let them test the free market. Because guess what you're going to do? You're going to overpay. Y'all Cowboy fans? You're from Dallas?
Yeah.
This is the whole Dak Prescott thing. They had a chance to sign Dak at an earlier contract. They said no, no, no. Then Dak switches agents. Oh, hey, did you know the new TV deal is going to wind up in 3 years? You're going to be leaving on the money on the table if you sign this deal. So then Cowboys realize that. They come in. They want to give him the deal that he wanted a year ago. Like, no, 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 no. My deal is here. What did that do in that relationship with Dak and Jerry Jones? Probably soured it a little bit. Why didn't Jerry go to him and say, you're worth more than what I'm paying you? Jose Altuve, he was still in his contract when they came to him and said, we're going to pay you this. He loved it. He took it. Really, reality was, had he waited 2 more years, the market would have been this. You've got guys like Springer, who got a tremendous amount of money. He's not better than Jose Altuve, but he waited. He waited. So my point is, if you take care of your team and you take care of what you got and realize, I cannot win without this guy, it's actually going to be beneficial for you to pay them earlier than let them get soured, let them taste a free agent market, and you're gonna pay a lot. Which means that all your other expenses have to get tighter to be able to afford your new labor. Does that help? That answer your question?
Yeah.
On that? Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, like, also, like, it helps them feel like, you know, he's looking after me. Like, I don't even have to
that
be worried
too.
About
I mean,
that.
Yes.
It's like,
he's already gonna take care of me. Yeah, he doesn't abuse me. Like a, he's not there to go and drive me into the ground.
No.
You know, he wants me to win with him. I'm glad you said that, because that needs to be my first conversation, is to get out of this call and go make sure that I tie that loose end up before somebody else ties it for me.
Absolutely.
That's good. Well, having a big team, the way you do it today, if you see something, because you sometimes you feel, you know, whenever the office is kind of maybe in low energy, what is one thing that you do to keep your team 100%?
That's great. It starts with me.
Starts with you.
It has to start with me. The moment I come through that door, it has to be Robert is in the building. It has to be. And if I come in at 12 o'clock, then I've missed the morning of what could have been. But if I come in earlier in the morning with the right vibe, I lift everybody else up. Because I'm excited. Yesterday, we got awarded a deal. It was 30 seconds, and I went out to that bell, and I rang the bell, and it scared people and whatever else, right? But they were really excited that we're moving again. And they feed off of that momentum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They do. You know, so I hated something when I can't be here early in the morning because I got a commitment or I got to hit the gym real quick or I've got to do something. I hate it because I feel like I'm not getting everybody off on the right start. Right? It's super important. Momentum and drinking the Kool-Aid.
Mm. You have to drink the Kool-Aid.
It's really important. I got to understand your vision. You saw that I wasn't alone. I brought people with me to that event where I met you guys because I want them to drink the Kool-Aid with me. Mm-hmm. This is the event in LA where we're going to go meet with the mastermind guy. You know, I don't want to come home and have to explain it all. I want them to sit there, feel it, ask questions to understand it. When I went to the Driven event, you know, in LA with Albert Preciado, I brought somebody with me. That turned into me coming back and spending the money somewhere else because they could understand where this was going. Mm-hmm. They could see, wow, can you imagine putting on a 2,000-person event like this? Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
That's huge. You helping your team, because what's your idea of helping your team? I know we were talking about it before, that if they win, you basically win. So kind of win-win.
Yeah, you know, that's how it was in the beginning, right? It's like taking care of financial aspects of their life, making sure that I do that for them. But as I've gone on in life, I realize there's more to that. Giving them a constant. Giving them stability, letting them know that we're in a forward projection, right? Leading by example. You know, for example, COVID. COVID's a big deal for everybody around. And you have your opinion, whatever. I don't require vaccinations here to work here. Mm-hmm. It's not my call, it's not my place. It's not my right. And I don't know why it's occurring. Mm. But they don't have to worry about that. So one, creating a constant for them. Your job is safe. When we had our snowbit event where we couldn't go to work for 2 days because that snow, remember that ice storm that would freak, I mean, you know, it blew up Dallas. I mean,
Alaska, we called it.
Yeah, what'd you call it? Alaska. Yeah, I mean, we called it here snowbit, right? Because it was horrible. Well, we couldn't work for 2 days, right? Like, I'm not going to dock your pay because you can't make it to the office. That's not your fault. Act of God or whatever, right? Whatever it was, right? So it's being able to be human with them, but also understand I need to bring stability in your life, because in everybody's life, there's already other things to make it unstable. They don't need to come to work and feel like there's going to be problems at work. So if we have cancers in our company, what's they going to happen? You've got to remove them. Yeah. You've got to remove issues that make coming to work unhappy, because you spend a lot of your time here, 8 hours, 10 hours a day, sometimes more than you see your children, right? Yeah. You need to get along with work. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to get along with your coworkers, especially if you're in a direct relationship with them. Like, I hate this guy. Oh, I hate the way he talks to me, or I hate this, or I hate her, or what. You got to, like, come in there, say, listen, you guys are adults. I'm not going to referee this, but we got to come up to a situation on how we make this work. Mm-hmm. Because people are watching you and just feeding off of it. Mm-hmm. And that means they're feeding off of me. And I've got to understand how this works. So it's very important to address morale issues. Mm-hmm. It's really important to make sure people understand, I'm excited by everything going on here. This is different. People want to come to our company. This is unlike any other company. I hope so. There should be a unique culture here. There's a guy here that's crazy and gets on stages and social media, whatever. It's a very 2021 kind of company.
Yeah.
You know, with a touch of Silicon startup.
So I have a question for you, because I know, like, kind of what I started, I didn't have the business-minded, entrepreneurship-minded parents. I didn't, even my friend group wasn't necessarily someone that thought about, you know, going big or big goals, big ambitions. So, like, one thing that really helped me out was networking, going to networking events, exposing myself to maybe people that were 3-4 years older than me that were doing something that maybe I would like to be doing. And with that experience and building connections, building relationships, also found kind of what made me unique, right? What was my authenticity factor? What was my brand that when I was going to these networking events, I could utilize to build more authentic and better relationships? Like, what's your take, I guess? Because I know you touched on the mentorships, but did you ever utilize networking events as well to kind of, I guess, accelerate growth and build
relationships. Yeah, I mean, that whole real estate club is why I exist today, mm-hmm. right? Because it was a giant networking event. I always, when I tell the story, I say it's like a giant Rich Dad Poor Dad book that came to life. Because you're in there and you're watching the case study on how to be a single family investor. Not taught by the instructors, taught by actual members. Mm-hmm. And they're giving you their whole story on how they found it, what they paid, you know, and how they're making money today. Then you get the multifamily guy, and he's going there giving you same thing, his story, and you can see his financials. And then in that club, they did a road trip, like on a Friday, where they would show up at somebody's property, mm-hmm. right? The owner's property, and you could visit that site. Mm-hmm. And you can ask questions. You could look around. You could really get exposed to it. It's nonstop. That's networking. And next thing you know, you're meeting somebody, or you're talking to somebody, or you hear something that somebody's doing. Oh, you know, I'm an owner, but I'm not doing that. I didn't know about LEDs. I didn't know that I could cut my energy conservation down. I didn't know about low flow toilets. I can cut my water bill by 80% if I change this out. Oh, well, that's interesting. I've helped myself. So networking is not just about like making contracts and about making new deals with somebody. It's also about improving your own existence, your own life, mm-hmm. you know? So I was very fortunate that I joined that. And there was, because of that, there was momentum. And this is really important. I want everybody to understand is that momentum is super important in life. You know, when I joined that real estate club, I actually, the very first time, I went with a buddy of mine. And that buddy of mine and I were going to buy a multifamily investment together. And at the end, he decided he didn't want to spend the $10,000 to go, to be a full member. I can do it myself. So he wound up buying a single family house. He renovated himself with his brother-in-law. They sourced their own materials. They didn't hire any contractors. And what do you think happened? It took them 3 times as long to get it done. Well, in that 3 months, the market changed on him. And the market meant that he could not sell that house for another 6 more months. So before it's all said and done, he had that house almost a year, and he made minuscule profit. He never did another real estate event again. I'm sorry. He never did another single family house again because it caused issues at home. It caused doubt at home. And they almost lost money, which would have been the end of the war for them, right? Because the market has switched on them. At the other hand, I joined the club. I got around it. I eventually bought a deal. I had mentorship around me. And I worked it every single day. And today I got over 4,000 units. I bought 5,600 in my life. I've got a net worth that's tens and tens of millions of dollars. But that wouldn't have happened had something negative happened early on. His momentum got stopped. Mm-hmm. Mine kept going. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Super important to be around in a situation where there's consistency, because consistency builds momentum.
That's correct. I heard this saying, like, motion stays in motion.
Yeah.
Super simple concept, but it took me a while to understand it. But it is true. As soon as you step out of the gas pedal, you know, you start slowing down. And to get back into that speed, you know, motion stays in motion. So that momentum that you get, it might be hard for you to get back.
Here's another one. Imagine going 100 miles an hour and you hit over a rock, right? You're going to roll right over that rock. But if you're going 3 miles an hour, 2 miles an hour, that you're going to go up the rock of the hill and it's going to come back down, right? Because you weren't going fast enough. You have to be so busy in life, so many opportunities going, that no one single setback is enough to stop you. I remember this one time, I actually experienced that a couple of times where, you know, I bid on multiple deals and we were getting the deals and I didn't get this one that I wanted, but I got these other two. I'm like, I don't care. I got these other two. I kept the train going. Mm-hmm. That car kept going 100 miles an hour to the next destination because I didn't get that deal. It didn't slow me down. So you're 100%, I love what you just said, motion stays in motion, right? I mean, I think that's Newton's law, right? But it makes so much sense from a business standpoint, right? If you're moving forward and you're constantly pushing forward, you will keep doing it until you stop. Until you stop pushing forward, so don't stop what you're doing.
So let me ask you this, Robert. You keep going 100, you have high energy.
Yeah.
How do you stay that positive? Do you have a morning routine? Do you drink too much coffee? Do you think too much about your why? What is it, man? What is that big energy that keeps you going?
I feel very blessed in life. You know, I have beautiful, fantastic children who, to my knowledge, are not screwed up. You know, they read the Bible. They go to a great school, you know. And I think about all that I have in life. And I'm really blessed by that. And that's my constant. That's my why. And I think about the rest of my life that's good because of the decisions that I made. It's very easy to get happy if you think about happy things. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to get sad if you think about sad things. Does that make sense? I mean, mm-hmm. It's just, right?
Thoughts, yeah.
Where your thoughts are is where you will go. We've all had a set downs. I mean, whether it's a bad breakup or whether it's a loss in your family or it's, you know, a financial hit. You can think about it or you can move forward and think about the good. And it's not hard. It's not easy. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. It is hard. Because you live in regrets of things that have occurred, right? What does Gary say? No regret. Get out of the regret thing. Do what you need to do, you know? And so if you can find a way to hold on to what's best in your life, you know, it will pull you out. For example, like you say you go through a bad breakup. And let's say that hurts. And that hits you a little bit because you think, what could I have done differently? Could I have helped? Could I have done some more? Let's say instead of a bad breakup, you could trade that out for, but your children have to be hurt and they're in the hospital. Or something, God forbid, they die. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be thinking about the bad breakup? Or are you going to think about how you don't have to see your kid anymore? Mm-hmm. So you got to frame it. Mm-hmm. It is just a piece, a moment in time that you're magnifying so much more than what it is. Because relationships, friendships, they're going to come and go. You're only left with yourself,
yeah.
Right? And if I have to choose between you and my children, there's no choice.
Yeah.
And that's true for everybody else. So I remember, and it's funny because I heard Gary say that one time. He goes, I'm happy because as long as the five people in my life are alive, I'm good. He's talking about his mom, his dad, his children, you know, his brother, his sister, you know. It's so true. Because you would never sacrifice one of them for that situation just occurred to you to not happen. Mm-hmm. So how can you not find a little reflection on that? You should be able to find positivity. You know, so I think it's kind of what I'm doing is like, I know there's a lot going on good in my life. So I focus on that. You know, you can think, well, you're so successful. Well, what would you be unhappy about? Oh, believe me, we can all go through it because mm-hmm. our expectation level changes. You know, I should be here, but I got some bad advice or did whatever and I'm not there, right? Well, same thing somebody in the beginning. You know, I should be here, but I'm only here.
True.
Well, it's because you're negative too, right? Like, I don't wish any ill will on anybody. I have competitors. I admire them for what they're doing. I watch what they're doing. If I agree with it, great. If I like it, great. I take it and I move on. I don't worry about your success. I'm going to do you. You do you. I'm saying, you do you. I'll do me. And I'll see you at the finish line. Mm-hmm. Cool. End of story. You do it your way. I'll do it my way. But I'll meet you at the finish line. In other words, just don't worry about anybody. It's all minutia. It's all garbage that's just there to slow you down.
True.
Yeah, like, I think I was watching one of your clips on Instagram saying, like, I think you were on a sales call. It's like, you know, the best time to buy real estate was, like, 40 years ago. What's the best next time to do it? Right now. Even, like, with negative, maybe a negative relationship, it's like, yeah, maybe you should have left a year, 6 months ago, or whatever, but you can also still make that decision right now instead of continuing it to let it further just, you know, bring you down or whatever.
And it's the same thing with a job, you know. I heard people that would leave their jobs, you know. And I almost know nobody that left a bad job that was not happier the next time. But it's what it is that we get into this little square of life. We don't want to get out of our comfort zone where we need to accept less than what we deserve for the consistency of what it is. You have to give up something to get to the next level. And that's hard because not everybody's willing to give up something. Like, I mean, y'all watch Marvels? Like, I think I've been watching it. So I'm watching Marvel's Endgame, Infinity War.
Which one? Which one?
So Thanos had to give up his daughter to get what he wanted. Now, that's really difficult. And that's a very extreme example. Mm-hmm. But he got what he wanted. And he was able to do his little finger snap. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's similar. Are you willing to give up something to get to the next level of your life? Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's something that doesn't help you, like a bad, you know, relationship, friendship, whatever, versus something that you really love. You know, I enjoyed doing what I did in my corporate job, but I didn't like getting screwed. Mm-hmm. I think, why didn't I leave sooner, as you look back on it now? Because it's such an easy decision.
It's all a choice, right? You have a choice to be happy, a choice to be sad, a choice to be better, a choice to deal with whatever, how someone's treating you or whatever the be.
I mean, for you right now, you send me a DM.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you thought, do I send this DM?
Yeah.
Right?
I had two choices. Like, oh, okay. It's because he said, like, sorry, I didn't reach out or sorry, I didn't reply to your message. I could have said, hey, no worries, period, end of conversation, mm-hmm. right? But I chose to connect. I chose to deepen the relationship because I was like, hey, he may not reply to this, but he might. I made a choice to take that risk in opening up basically a Pandora's box.
Sure, right? Sure. Well, Pandora's box means something bad is going to happen.
It could be good or bad.
But you're right. I mean, I'm going to have to look it up to confirm that, but I think you're right. But you're right.
The choice.
You opened up another selection of choices. Mm-hmm. And where this new relationship goes, you don't know where it's going to go. But it never would have happened if you don't decide to cross the road.
So let me ask you this, Roy. When was the last time you took a risk and it wasn't worth it?
And it wasn't worth it? I don't think there's anything like that. I think that, as I said to you earlier, you know, there's no else. There's no losses. There's only learning experiences, right? You know, Thomas Edison, you've heard that one about how many, I know 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb, but I just need that one way to make a light bulb. You know, everybody fails. Elon Musk was on the verge of bankruptcy, and he figured it out at the last second, and now he's like a crazy billionaire.
He's richer now than Jeff Bezos now.
He's gonna go to the moon. I mean, to Mars. You know, I don't know if you know that. You know, all his technology that he's doing is meant to be on Mars.
Really?
Well, think about it.
That the Dutch coin.
He has an end goal in mind.
No. What's that?
He has the end goal in mind.
He has an end goal. And so everything he has. How do I get there? Well, he's got a drilling company. I forget what it's called. The Boring Company. Boring. What is that for? That's to build cities on Mars, underground, right? He's got the batteries. He's got the truck car. If you ever played Moon Patrol back in the day in the 1980s, it was a game. It looks just like that truck, that crazy-looking cyber truck, you know? And what is it? That's indestructible. Why is it indestructible? Because I'm on another planet. I don't know what I'm going to hit. So he hits it with a sled. Everything he does is with the idea of it using it on Mars, which is amazing. You ever think about that, right?
Yeah.
So... yeah, I mean, you just have to risk yourself and get to that next level.
Yeah.
It's all about risk in life, man. It's all about risk. And, you know, the bigger the risk, the bigger the payback. You know, I walked away from everything I ever knew when I walked away from that corporate job. And I went into this life that I could never have possibly have had. Never. There's nobody in my family that's at this level. There's nobody in my life that was at that level. But because I didn't have the right group in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them, where they're trying to pull you back down. Don't do this. You got a great job. You got a great family. Don't do this. But I did. I have an even better job today. I have even a better family today because of it. You know, it's all about risk, man. It's about what you're willing to give up to get to the next level. Great life, good life.
What are you willing to sacrifice?
What you're willing to sacrifice.
Right.
You asked me that question?
No. It's just, what are you willing to sacrifice is kind of, there's always a sacrifice that you have to make to make it out there. So it's like, what do you want?
Absolutely.
So let's go back to the risk factor, right? You decided to take a risk and do one of the things that a lot of people are afraid of, which is putting yourself out there by building a brand. Tell me about why you started building a brand. What was maybe did you see other people doing it?
You know, my mentors changed. You know, my mentor was the guy that owned the real estate club, but I was tapping out.
Mm-hmm.
I was the big fish in the little bitty pond, and I want to just keep growing.
Outgrowing them, yeah.
You know, I was outgrowing them, and so I started looking for new mentors, and the very first one I found was Gary Vaynerchuk. I've had a chance now to visit him twice, once by myself, once with my company. We took a videographer in January 2019, and I learned a lot about videography. I learned a lot about print media. I learned a lot about social media as a whole, just making sure that you're relevant, you're present, you're posting. Then I found Grant Cardone, who talked a lot about promotion and either promoting your brand or you're demoting it. But then he and I started becoming like friends because he's got this apartment site to him, which he never had before, which is like, it's almost meant to be that I'm following him and he does that, right? And that relationship has led into other little relationships, right? But I just want to just challenge myself so that I can be the best that I can. I want to get to $4 billion. How am I going to get to $4 billion? Is if you know me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you know me, then you got a chance to invest with me. Maybe you invest in the apartment deals. Maybe you invest in my new coaching education that I'm going to be doing. But I need to create that environment so I can create what I need to get to $4 billion. Right? And so I guess it was 2014, 2015 when I found social media. Truly, it wasn't until after my divorce when it went high because, you know, you always have something calling you back, pulling you back. I'm distracted. Or why are you doing that? From the people closest to you, you're like, and you can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've gone so far in my life the last 3 years since my divorce. And God bless her. I love her to death, right? But it's just, there was a limiting factor to it, and we weren't on the same page, and we weren't going to be on the same page, you know. And I look on it now, and it's been amazing, right? Because I've changed. We've all changed in life. I mean, y'all, you guys know this, right? You know, you will change in your life, depending on where you're at. This isn't an ego trip. Mm-hmm. This is what is required in 2021. It is. And if you're good enough, the market will tell you. It is. If you're good enough, the market will tell you. If it wasn't for social media, I would be in a different spot today, because social media is what helped me learn reputation management for my apartment complexes, and how important reviews are, and people seeing that on the front end and wanting to live there, at the same time knowing that you got your pulse on your business because people are leaving reviews. That's helped me survive a couple of downturns in Houston. You know, in Dallas, you guys haven't had any downturns since the Great Recession. It has been tremendous momentum. Yeah. Tremendous amount of people jumping into the real estate space because it looks freaking easy. I'm going to tell you, in Houston, it is not that. We have had this.
Wow.
But I'm a better operator than anybody in Dallas because of that. Because I've had to go through. I'm what I call a wartime general with a bunch of peacetime generals. And what's going to happen when the next real war hits and you get popped in the mouth? You're going to find out who's got a glass chin, and you're going to find out who can take the punch. You know, I was ready for it to happen in COVID. I was ready for this. Like, man, we were ready. We have video tours, you know, the online tours. We have online bill pay. And it just never materialized, because guess what happened? That didn't happen in the Great Recession. The government came in. The government came in and came in with rent. Well, first, they did no eviction moratorium. That was not around. They didn't care about nobody in 2007, 2008. That was very, very political. Then they came with free rent money. That didn't exist in 07, 08. They let businesses go out of business.
Yeah.
Which is the natural order of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to create, you have to destroy sometimes, you know? So somebody has to die. It's survival of the fittest. But that's capitalism. That's growing. You learn from, why is that happening? The learning, the loss, right? You learn from that loss, right? So it's part of it. I forgot where we're going. I'm going on a tangent here, but it's you need to continue to challenge yourself for growth. Oh, it was the branding, how I decided. It just evolved. It evolved because I knew it was coming. I knew it was necessary. I never had any desire to have 200,000 people following me on social media. It's not it. I didn't really want to do education, because I want to make money here doing what I do every single day. But it just kind of grew, and I see how important it is. So the mentors that I followed were right. And now I'm looking for new mentors. I got the guy I'm going to see in Los Angeles. That's a new mentor. That's not someone that's on my list from before. You know, so it's very important to get what you can, learn, as we said before, take that superpower, somebody else's power, bring it part of your own, add it to your own arsenal, and then move on. Move on.
That's cool. We're going to have an event coming up on Dallas on October 27th. We're having a lot of young professionals coming by. If somebody asked me, man, that interview with Robert Martinez was great, how can they get plugged in with multifamily with you? What would be, if they are interested in investing in multifamily or getting to know more about multifamily?
What's number the best one, you need to follow me on Instagram, right? Because I'm gonna give you free information. Mm-hmm. You know, as we talked about before you invest in anything, invest in yourself. Well, invest with someone, I'm sorry, watch somebody that's doing this every single day. And I'm talking about this podcast will be on there, other video interviews, other experiences, the awards, different things. You'll get to see what it is like to own multifamily. I talk about our successes all the time, right? And I'm going to familiarize yourself with it. Then you want to get educated, right? So go to Apartment Rockstar on Instagram. Go to my YouTube page, either Rockstar Capital or Apartment Rockstar, and see the different things that we have going on, and see if that's right for you before you make a big dramatic step. It's got to fit right for you. And then you need to get mentorship. For so long, I would always refer somebody to a real estate club. You know, we're having our first mastermind at the end of this month, right? It's cheap, like $2,500. It's nothing, right? To sit there all day long with other like-minded people and ask questions from somebody that is where you want to be. That's mentorship. Why? It's why I talk to my mentors, because they're further down the map. Mm-hmm. I want to know what they know. I want them to teach me. And if it means I got to pay to play, that's part of life.
Yeah.
Nothing's for free in life. If you want to learn something, then you got to be willing to, okay, well, this is what he's asking, which again, it will never be this price ever again, right? This is just how to get the that we're gonna get the bugs out, right? But you're creating the relationship. Now, I mean, I've got Grant Cardone's phone number on here. That's not gonna happen if I don't go and commit and spend what's important to him. You know, Gary V, Grant, they all follow me. Why? Because they know of me. They didn't know me before I went to that class. They didn't know of me before. That works for me. That association works for me. And so you've got to get into a real estate club where you make and you network and you figure out where you're going to go in the future.
And I think you were talking about it before this meeting, about bringing value. You know, you have mm-hmm. to. The reason why probably Gary Vee and Grant Cardone started following you too is because they saw something. You gave something to them out of value.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Thank you. I enjoyed both trips. And it's interesting that out of both trips, I walked away with something. You know, when I went to go see Gary Vee, I walked away with a cereal box that says Podcast Bits, which he never launched with Kellogg. So these are just the prototypes. I have one of the boxes at home. It's autographed. I have his Entrepreneur magazine when he was there. Autographed. I think there was one other thing I can't remember right now. Oh, his bottle, his wine company. Mm. He gave me a bottle signed. At that time, it was the only one that he had ever signed before. He told me that. When I went to go see Grant Cardone and it's in my office, there's a gold octopus that is in my office that Damon John gave him. Wow. And he gave it to one of my children and I'm holding it for him for safekeeping. But yeah, you got to bring value. I get a ton of DMs all the time. And there's no value there. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I doing this with Natalie? Because I know that you're in a real estate club. Mm-hmm. And I got to get on more stages. It's why I went to Dallas. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't imagine that they would actually ask me. But if I hadn't made the decision, like when I was told, no, we don't have any spots open. I'm like, all right, do I still want to go? Yes, I want to go because I want to meet people in Dallas. I want to network. I want to talk to Mark Allen, the host of the event with Greystone. And it turned into an opportunity to now speak. I got on that stage. She met me because of that. I may not have met her privately walking around.
No.
I may not have. But I was there. I had a chance to say who I was. I had a chance to present next to the people next to me. And it turned into this opportunity, right? So it's very important that you never forget what your mission is.
French fight focus.
Yeah. Say it again.
Sorry. We had the past podcast that we did, our guest really he really brought it to our attention about how you need to know your purpose, that you have to go there with a purpose. You know, you wanted to go there to that event to connect with more people, and he tells this story about how he was trying to get french fries. He went to this restaurant and he was waiting on his plane on the airport, and he went to this restaurant, they didn't have french fries. He went to this other restaurant, he didn't have french fries. Then he went to the third restaurant and then they had french fries. He had the french fries, and the person that he was sitting next to, he was like this big multifamily CEO or somebody that he was running, that he ended up making a connection and building a relationship from there. So he's like, because I knew what I wanted, you know, I kept looking for them, and
didn't
I eventually
settle at all.
I didn't settle.
Didn't settle for waffle fries. Not for potato chips, for french fries.
Yeah.
And being there and getting also to know his purpose. So we're talking about networking, and he's like, you know, whenever you go network, you need to know what you need to share to people what you're there for, you know? Mm-hmm. So he was sitting down, he's like, man, I came here to do french fries, to get french fries, but I'm really into multifamily. And the guy next to him is like, oh, really? Well, I run at this multifamily hedge fund or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, no way. So at the end of the day, by sharing what he wanted, his purpose, and staying focused and not settling down to what's given, because he had a choice that we were talking about, well, he decided to keep looking for what he wants.
You know, it reminds me, you know, and this is going to be pretty serious what I'm about to say, but I mean, you know, this is important, what you're doing. And how committed are you to this? Where does that line stop? This isn't fun and games. I had to have a passion for it. And that passion was so overwhelming in me that it was more than the friendships that I lost along the way. It was more than the relationships that I lost along the way. You got to ask yourself how committed you are to this and if this is really going to be your future craft or not, because you're going to be competing with someone like me for that deal. And if it's important to me because I got a life goal I'm going to get, you're not going to beat me. You better have something similar to compete with. You know, yesterday we got awarded a deal in a choice market that we have other deals at, and we came late to play and we got the deal in the end. within 24 hours, in less than that. In 24 hours, we had that deal. Somebody else was in the position, and he literally took it from them, out of their hands, because we were the best qualified and we had the best terms. Now, what does that mean? Earlier this year, I went to Destin to go buy a brand new 2021 construction. It was going to be an $80 million purchase, and they wanted $800,000 hard money. You know what hard money means?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. Non-refundable, just to get a look, just to get a peek, just to get in the contract. You don't waste their time. They wanted $800,000. And, of course, the biggest I'd ever written was maybe $400,000. And I said, wow, okay, that's a lot to risk. Because $800,000, as well off you are, you're going to feel it. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to like it, and you're going to remember the rest of your life. And so I told myself, okay, am I willing to do this? Okay, yeah, I want to swing that bat. Because I knew whether I get this or not, swinging that bat meant that I could swing other bats. You just got to get the fear out of the first one. What happened in the end was we did it. We were in prime position. Somebody, an institution, came from over the top. They bid $5 million more than me, which it was still worth it. I just went with what the broker said I needed to be the top offer. $2 million hard. I was done. They never even talked to me again until it was over. And I'm like, wow, I learned a lesson that how bad did I want it? I didn't want it bad enough because I was not exposed to swinging an $800,000 bat. Somebody was used to a much bigger bat and they swung $2 million. Well, these are lessons you learn. So yesterday, we make an offer. I offered above what the guy wanted by just a little bit, but I found out what they wanted. They want certainty of close. Mm. He offered $100,000, $150,000 hard. I offered $350,000, which was big for the size of property that it is. And I said, we'll close by Christmas or by the end of the year because he wants it done this year. Boom, boom, boom. Had an answer by 4 o'clock. He had that LOI for 6 hours.
Wow.
It's the fastest LOI I've ever gotten returned back to me. And so my point of telling you that story, that doesn't happen if I don't go through the loss, learn of what happened earlier in the year, losing the $80 million deal. This is a small deal. It's like $15 million. But you see how much more I had evolved, how much more sophisticated I was. I came and I blew out the other guy because I wanted it more. Just like the guy in New York that bid $2 million hard, $5 million over my offer, wanted it more than me. So this is serious business. And if you want it, you're not going to dip your toe. Every time I've dipped my toe in anything, I've lost. Mm-hmm. I've made a mistake. When I went hard after something is when I got it. Or I got real close to getting it and I got something equivalent because I already crossed that threshold of fear. I crossed that threshold of $800,000. Well, $400,000 is nothing now. Mm-hmm. $350,000 is not anything. The same lesson that when I came back from losing that deal in Destin, I came back to an equivalent deal here in Houston, a Class A deal. And because I got used to, you know, I was about to pay, I don't know, $300,000 a door, this one at $150,000 looked pretty like it was on sale. Right? And so I go get it. And I'm so happy that I did because it's worth more today in just 60 days. So you have to cross that threshold in your mind of fear. And once you do, you're there. Now that's where your flag is. And you can come back and take everything that's behind you. But you got to be willing to do it again later on.
Yeah.
It's fear and then understanding that you deserve it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Getting rid of those limiting beliefs.
I love that. Understanding that you deserve it. You know, I'm going to leave you something else before we end the podcast. Fear has another acronym for something else. It's called false evidence appearing real. Most things that you were afraid of weren't real. Like, I don't like being in an empty house alone, right? And in my last house, I would hear little noises all the time. All the time, creaks, whatever. Now, and that house had foundational issues because there's giant trees that are beautiful, but they're too close. And I'm sure there was nothing in the house because I'm here today, mm-hmm. you know? But my mind went crazy with false evidence appearing real, you know? I did move, and my house today is very crisp. There's no sound at all, so there's none of that fear. But that's true in life, right? Is that you know, you let these things slow you down. You know what you want, so go get it.
Yeah, I heard something. I forgot where it was from, but it's like, it's okay. It's better to lose to an opponent rather than backing out of facing that opponent because of fear. Mm-hmm. It's like never lose to fear. Always go and take that loss against something else, because kind of like that 800,000 situation you had. Yeah, you lost there, but you didn't. If you would have been fearful of putting 800,000, you would have never maybe even gotten the deal from yesterday.
So. Yeah, and I wanted the deal, right? Because it was in Florida, in Destin, mm-hmm. and like that's like a hotbed. Yeah. I don't own anything outside of Texas, so it would have forced us to grow. So how do I manage this deal in Florida? Well, once I learned, guess what? I'm buying another deal in Florida, or I'm going to Georgia, and I haven't done that yet. I'm still technically in Houston and South Texas. I've got to get to Dallas so I can learn how to run in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And then from Dallas, I can get to like Arizona, or I can get to, you know, wherever, Florida. But you've got to learn to run remotely. And we haven't learned that yet, right? So that's our next level for us.
Nice.
Guys, it's been an amazing time with you guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you to the Next Gen group. Amazing, amazing. Wow, this has been great. I hope you guys got as much value out of this as I did. Seeing such young professionals, young entrepreneurs already with vision, already with passion, and really just the grit to move forward, ask a question, eliminate that fear in life is why I know they're going to get ahead, and they're going to be probably further than I am at the same age. So thank you guys for joining me. Thank you for another episode of the Apartment Rockstar Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.